This is the Average Guy Network, and you have found Home Tech and show number 146, recorded on December 5th, 2013. Here at Home Tech, we cover all your favorite tech gadgets that find their way into your home, news, reviews, product updates, and conversation, all for the average tech guy. I'm your host, Jim Collison, broadcasting live from the AverageGuy.tv studios here in Bellevue, Nebraska. Actually, really, really cold Bellevue, Nebraska. We had a cold front roll through. Zero tonight is the high, so that should be fun here in Bellevue, Nebraska. And we post the show with world-class show notes each week out at the AverageGuy.tv. If you have questions or comments and even a contribution you'd like to add, you can contact the show. Send us an email, podcast at theAverageGuy.tv. You can find me on Twitter at Jay Collison or follow the show schedule on our Twitter account at TheAverageGuyTV. If you're watching us on Google Plus or on YouTube, actually now I didn't change that script. We're only on YouTube now. We've dropped the live stream. It was having so many problems. We just decided to give them the boot. And so now only the YouTube player is playing, and that should work for you if you're on a PC for sure. And on most mobile and tablets, you should be able to run that YouTube player or watch us in the YouTube player that comes on the device. Not all of them work, and not all of them support live streaming, so I apologize for that. But we have moved completely to YouTube, and hopefully that's a great experience for you. If it isn't working or you're having trouble with it, send me an email, jim at theaverageguy.tv. All right, we got a super busy show for you guys tonight. A couple guys, one regular and one, well, your brothers, what the heck, coming back and joining us as a guest, and he's been around the podcasting circuit as of late, making all the most recent shows, BYOB being one of them. Paul Brerin. Paul, how are you?
I'm good, thank you, Jim. I'm a little sleepy, and for me that means I talk fast. So if I sound like a gerbil out there, you might want to go with 0.8 or 0.7 on your podcast playback.
Or maybe you'll just go from 0.1 to 0.7 very, very fast, and we'll get all that information in. So Paul, welcome. And then, of course, our regular and our coming in from the University of Maryland in all things cybersecurity, it's Christian Johnson. Christian, how are you?
I'm doing well. We're a week away from finals, so I'm just getting ready to ship home and just giving it the final push.
Man, I tell you what, that is so hard to believe for me that you are already through your first semester. I have no idea where that went.
Yeah, you and me both.
Good heavens. It just flew by. It's crazy how fast that went. So how are you feeling about your grades for the upcoming semester?
Good. I mean, it was definitely an adjustment, but I definitely know where I need to spend time and where I don't need to spend time. And learning time management this semester is for sure the biggest lesson. Definitely a readaptation from what I was used to during high school. So
yeah, a little bit different, right? But I know you pretty well. I'm sure you've adjusted, and you'll have it next semester. Will be like it. Like the first semester never happened.
Yep.
So, nice work. Well, good to see you. And we've got some changes in the air out there. Christian and I have been talking about some rebranding and some changes around Home Tech and the Average Guy Network. I'm not necessarily ready to say we're officially going to move this way, but I've been working with Dave McCabe for a long time, and of course, he started the Geeks Network over there. He's trying to. He's actually got all the names and none of the platforms that are out there. And but he's changing over to the Geeks Network, and I thought it would be nice to rebrand Home Tech. It never really rang true. Nobody can remember it. Even Kevin Schoonover last week on the show said, you know, the Average Guy Tech Show or whatever. They could never. It just never really worked very well. And I'd like something a little more specific. But I wanted to keep home in it because we do talk a lot about technology that's in the home, and we do kind of focus on that, computers and gadgets and those kinds of things. So we're looking at the name HomeGadgetGeeks.com. I couldn't believe that was available to begin with. But HomeGadgetGeeks.com, and I want to know what you think. I did buy the URL, so I've got it. But interested in your feedback, send me an email, jim@theaverageguy.tv. We would actually, Christian and I are thinking of moving the whole site onto another. It'll have its own dedicated website with all the tracking and linking and all the stuff that is out there. We'll be moving financial tech, and by the way, we just recorded another financial tech, and if you haven't listened to it yet, there's a brand new one out there. Go out to theaverageguy.tv. Literally 15 minutes of your day. Just get in and get out, and some of the best financial news and information in 15 minutes that you can get with Andrew Hunt. But we're going to move financial tech over to GuideRock Capital. So the whole idea of theaverageguy.tv was to kind of incubate and start and push off things. And so financial tech is ready to go over to the GuideRock Capital site. They have a brand new site over there as well. And so In early 2014, we'll be moving Financial Tech. Actually, we'll drop the Financial Tech name. It'll go completely over to GuideRock Capital site. And Christian and I are contemplating this Home Gadget Geeks. Christian, you've thought about it now for a couple of weeks. How's that name resonating with you?
I mean, it's getting there, but to be honest, I feel like we cover more than gadgets. I mean, I think it's a big percentage, don't get me wrong, but I do want to make people feel like there's more to computing than gadgets in the home. So I know we've been bouncing around doing a Christian's Corner segment that is a separate feed that has all of my esoteric rants that people may or may not get on any given week. But yeah, it's warming up on me slowly.
Sure, sure. Well, it's not set in stone. Dave likes it, of course, because it's got the geeks in there. Paul, I'll ask you. This is the first time you've heard it. Any immediate reaction to Home Gadget Geeks? Does it make sense? Is it branded any better? Any thoughts on that?
Well, like you said, there's that correlation with Dave and his show. So for that piece, it's good. Any domain name that's longer than like 5 characters gets hard to remember, right? When you go to type it a week later or a month later if you haven't tuned in for a while.
Yeah.
So it's a real challenge, yeah.
Well, you know, and I've written homeservershow.com so many times, that doesn't seem very long to me anymore, but sometimes that's hard to remember. SurfaceGeeks.net, or I think he does own SurfaceGeeks.com as well over there, but... So anyways, if you got some suggestions for me, Christian, I totally agree with you. We do more than gadgets, and we're thinking of breaking off your Christian's Corner segment into a twice monthly podcast on its own. We may be jumping on Friday nights and give a little more in-depth detail to what you have, but not every week, because that's just you're a busy guy, and I want to respect that. So we've got some change in the making. I'm not going to change anything real soon, probably in the spring at this point, but we're in the thinking process. So send me an email, jim@theaverageguy.tv. And that, by the way, will stay the network. So I'm not going to change that. We actually have some plans on, I want to do some different things with The Average Guy to kind of take it back to what my original purpose and goal was, which is to help the average guy, the average tech guy, the average financial guy, the average fitness guy. That was kind of the original genesis of what we tried to do here. And I just collected too many really smart tech guys, and we kind of missed our market a little bit. And that's okay. We've got, a 1,000 or so listeners every week who come out and join us here on Home Tech, and we appreciate you listening to us. So your opinion is important, so send me that email. Speaking of important and emails to Dave McCabe, we're going to do a combined show next week. So if you're listening live here, next Wednesday night, that is December 11th, 2013, we're going to combine Home Server Show and Surface Geeks, and we're giving away some Xbox Gold 12-month subscriptions. So if you want to come out, be a part of that kind of one big show, and Dave will be giving those away. You got to be there to get to win that. We'd love to see you out there. Come to homeservershow.com, surfacegeeks.net, 8:30 Eastern next Wednesday, the 11th of December, and you can join us there as well. I saw this week, I was looking through I got an email, I guess, today. The Dell Venue 8 is available at the Microsoft Store this week. So again, if you're listening to this within the next week or two, starting December 9th, that Monday, they're going to shell that thing out for $99. So it's a $299 8-inch tablet, and they're going to give you $200 off. The first 20 are available at that price, and then after that, they're $199. So if you want to go wait in line at the Microsoft Store, I think you can't buy them online. They're only available at the store, so if you've got a Microsoft store near you, we've been talking about the Venue 8. Dave's had that out and about. Is good or maybe better than the Surface and the Surface Pro. A very nice tablet. And if you can get in line at the Microsoft store and be one of the first 20, you can get one. And at $99, it's a total steal. So I don't know how you could not, if you're close, try to make that happen. And then even after that, $199 until they're sold out. And then I noticed also at the store, the Microsoft store, they're offering free shipping now, both to and from. So if you buy it from them, you don't like it, you put it back in the box, and they pay the return shipping as well. So lots of things going on out there. If you haven't been out to the Facebook group, head out theaverageguy.tv/Facebook. Join that group. Man, tons of deals going on out there. And you guys have been funding the Tech Scholarship Fund very, very well. Gordon Schmidt is going to be the next recipient of the Nest smoke and carbon monoxide detector, which is $129, and it is a very, very high-tech meshable smoke and carbon monoxide detector. You can actually, Kevin ordered 3 of them, Kevin Schoonover, who talked about that last week, ordered 3 for his place, and is going to network them all together, and you can shut them off with a wave of a hand, and they'll send you a mini alert to your phone before they go blaring through the house as well, which is kind of cool. So kind of the next generation smoke detector that's out there. And yeah, $129 is a little much for a smoke detector. It's a lot. But then again, if it gets you out of your house safe, it's worth the money, right?
So, Jim?
Yeah.
Some states have a code where every bedroom needs it. So in my house, I went with new smoke detectors 3 years ago. I got the whole house equipped for under $450 with, I think, 9 detectors. Can you imagine doing that with the beautiful Nest brand?
Yeah, it would be. Yeah, I'd be a
little,
yes. Yeah. Yeah, no, for sure. It's not cheap.
I like the idea, but yeah.
It's not cheap. So Kevin and Gordon are going to, they're going to review those on the show January 2nd. We've already got them both booked in, and Kevin got his the other day, and Gordon will have his here in the next week or so, and they'll do some write-ups on those. And, well, Gordon will do the write-ups. Kevin, you can write it up if you want to. Drop it on the site, and we'll talk about that. So some stuff coming up January 2nd on the show. Paul?
And you sent a picture, I think, already, right? Someone threw it on their ceiling already. It was pretty cool to see the excitement of unboxing that thing. Hey, it does look beautiful.
It's a smoke detector.
I know. It actually looks good, you know?
Yeah. Well, and it's the true essence in some ways of Home Gadget Geek. You know, when we think about that, that's kind of what I have in mind initially when we got started, we spent a lot of time talking about computers, but the computer has matured and tablets have come on the scene, and now, you know, we're getting a lot of good in-home gadgets when we talk about the fridge, you know, the fridges that keep track of what come in and go out and various other options in your home. Of course, Nest is making some really nice equipment around stuff that was pretty mundane. When you think about a thermostat and a smoke detector, you kind of go, you know, those aren't terribly exciting. They've made them sexy, and it's pretty cool. So, good enough. That's my laundry list of things to get through. Christian, let's dive right into Christian's Corner with you, and I kind of want to hear what the revolution in computing that you think the average guy might be missing out on.
Yeah, so I guess missing out is somewhat misleading because it's not something that the average guy is going to be able to take advantage of right away. But a huge advance in the IBM Watson project took place in the last couple of weeks, and that is their announcement that they're making Watson itself, the cognitive processing power of Watson, available via a programmable API, which means for the first time, many developers will have unfettered access to create applications that can take advantage of the massively parallel, massively smart IBM Watson system, which is going to pave a new era for how we can not only develop and build applications that take advantage of this, but it also will kind of spark a whole new generation of cloud computing that, you know, we've started to see the rise of Amazon Web Services and how insanely popular that's been, where, you know, you can run a data center that would cost you $4.4 million a year to run. You can have that same power for 1 hour for $90 in that hour. So we've seen the kind of microfinancing that has taken place for these large-scale processing capabilities, and now we're starting to see some of the same hardware capabilities of what we're getting out of AWS in the API platform that Watson's providing. So this really opens up a whole new door, again, for the medical industry and all the other industries that I normally talk about when I get into this subject of big data. But the fact that there's now a what's called a REST API that other companies, third-party developers can get in on, it's just going to spur a whole lot of creativity and new ideas in this space that we haven't been able to see before because people haven't had the opportunity to work with something so flexible like that. So if this launch goes really successfully, this is huge, and I think this is kind of marking a new turning point for this project where, you know, it first started out, you know, proving a concept, which was proving that it could beat Jeopardy, to prove some of the technology behind it. But now when we're starting to see all the real-world impacts it's been having, especially in the Medicare industry, where I can't even begin to describe, you know, how much more accurate it is at diagnosing cancer and a lot of the implications for both federal and private customers who are looking to analyze data sets. I mean, there's just an enormous checklist of real-world applications that this technology has. And now it's really kicking off to what IBM rightly so coins as an era of cognitive computing, where the next 20 years is really going to be gauged by how we're using, you know, large-scale cloud processing technologies that are available to almost anyone on demand. And that's going to, again, pave as the technology itself gets more sophisticated, the fact that it's also becoming more widely accessible to, your everyday developer is a huge step forward for this kind of technology.
Christian, do you have any idea of what, give me an average guy application on this, or even an above average tech guy application on something like this, just kind of a real world, something that you can kind of grab onto? I mean, I know you can throw queries at it and stuff comes back, but you have any idea of something easy that you could grab onto?
Sure. I mean, so some of the really popular ones are the myth is, and it's I think it's going to be a myth that's very well proven, and I just call it a myth because people treat it like folklore, but the idea of a traffic jam is going to be gone in 10 years. And why do I say that? Because imagine every single traffic light in the United States reporting back to a central system, you know, when it's waiting, how many people are at that light, so on and so forth, to the point where your Google Maps, your GPS, or whatever is not only routing you to the most conducive location for you getting home on time, but the traffic lights itself are changing with the traffic pattern. So when you're sitting at that light for 5 minutes wondering why it's never turning green, it's because the traffic light, and you know no one's going the other direction, well, guess what? Now that traffic light's going to know how many people are in your proximity and is going to be able to make smarter decisions about when to change over. So the idea of traffic light jams is going to disappear. You're seeing General Electric had a big campaign a couple months ago about power grid failures and how they can automatically use statistical data from their power grid to redirect power from other grids when there's a blackout or a brownout to actually eliminate power outages based on reconnecting grids automatically using data they're getting back from. I think one case was, you know, they spin up their solar and, or sorry, they spin up their windmills to 100% capacity when a certain grid reports an outage or a drain, and then it just automatically reflows the energy. The one I'm working with, which has a lot of applications to the average guy, is atmospheric data, which, imagine if you get to the scale, and this is what NASA is working towards, imagine when you get to the scale where you have petabytes worth of data that describes what the weather and what the atmosphere and what the landmass forms have been doing on the planet for the last 40 plus years. You know, imagine how incredible it'll be when we have systems, and we already have the technologies, it's just a question of putting them together in the correct way, that can go through those 10 petabytes of data, and you as the user can say, I want to build a profile of all the hurricanes that have happened over the U.S. In the last 30 years. And it's going to, you know, whether it's an aerosol data or a Landsat data, it's going to be able to go and crawl through that entire data center, pull back all the data points that are specific to describing a hurricane. And that's cool. But then it's going to be able to tell you what that hurricane in 2 hours is going to look like, or in 2 weeks is going to look like, or maybe even a month what that's going to look like. And that's going to tell disaster recovery teams how to best move people and to prepare for disaster to minimize on loss of life and damage of critical assets. You know, for climate change and looking at aerosols in the atmosphere, how cool would it be if you could say, if these 12 plants were to shut down, the emissions in this city would go from here to here. So the smog or the pollution would go from here to here based on closing in and having exact precise numbers. No, you know, no magic math saying this is what's going to change that and here's by how much. You know, same thing with any type of natural disaster, and also in a limited capacity, this data is huge for some of the intelligence work that's being done with landform data, and so that, you know, again, there's just a lot of applications there, just from, you know, satellite data that we've been collecting for years on end, starting to get a lot of real-world applications, whether it's intelligence or, you know, natural disaster recovery, and you know, also another big area, cyber attacks, cyber crime, real-time threat analysis, all of these things are a big data approach. And so, honestly, you could probably call out 10 different things on your list, and I could probably point out 6 or 7 of them and say, here's where big data is currently working with that stuff. Because it is. It's just so huge. And I mean, look at the medical industry, where it's becoming, there's so many different conditions, diseases, documented and undocumented, that, you know, doctors and medical specialists have to filter through on a constant basis. The technology is constantly changing. The treatment options are constantly changing. And a doctor who's been out of med school for 20 years and isn't reading the same number of journals per week that he used to while he was in school may not currently know what the best treatment is or what the most state-of-the-art current treatment is for a particular patient with, you know, a particular disease that may not be that common. And, you know, here Watson is answering these questions within 60 seconds.
Is that him asking a real question to Watson that says, hey, I'm seeing these symptoms. Watson, what do you think?
Yeah, so the big thing with Kettering Medical Center is that they have all of their patient records and data in a centralized system. So when a doctor pulls up a particular patient file and puts in the symptoms, Watson instantly starts cross-referencing all the symptoms with all these other medical records and starts building a medical diagnosis. And then based on ontology, natural language processing, machine learning, some of these key concepts, it's able to give you 3 treatment options, and it'll rate the confidence it has in each of those treatment options. And it doesn't just give you a number and hope that you believe it. It gives you specific explanations and medical diagnosis as to why it thinks it's that right answer. So the idea, again, is that you're not, and I've said this before, you're not replacing the doctor. You're making the doctor's job easier. Because ultimately they still make the call, they still do the procedures, but it's almost as if you have, you know, the Star Trek computer talking to you solely about medical terminology. And, you know, over a year ago, Watson was already past a second year med student in terms of knowledge and medical understanding, and that's getting, you know, even more fine-tuned at this point. It can diagnose some of the most difficult forms of cancer on average 65 to 75% more the amount of the time, and quite honestly much more accurately than a doctor can, just because of all the different variables in place. So yeah.
And that's an interesting application for it, because like the guys are saying in chat, you know, so the traffic management, like you mentioned earlier, has always been a promise of big data, right? Being able to arrange those all. I think there is a huge expense a lot of times to retrofitting that grid to work, right, that way.
Sure.
You might have better luck actually controlling the cars themselves than, you know, we go into a city and the agreement is the city gets to take over your car and drive it, you know, and it goes autonomously. And I think we're seeing that with Google, and we're not very far away from that at all. But your example of the medical industry where doctors, I mean, this can be an application where doctors can use this today.
Yeah. I mean, right? they have a specialized application on their iPads at Wellpoint and Kettering Medical Institute where they're doing this. And again, it's incredible how far the technology has come since 2011, when Watson was first aired on Jeopardy. So
right, yeah, no, some interesting stuff for sure, and some interesting real world application for that, and I think a really good shot in the medical industry. We get, like you mentioned, doctors, it's getting harder and harder for them to keep up. I mean, there's just so much information, and of course, Watson doesn't have any trouble keeping up, right? I mean, it's always there. It's always going on. One of the guys said, please state the nature of your medical emergency. You know, the Star Trek, it's always true that science fiction is ahead of the technology and eventually gets here. So some pretty interesting stuff. Paul, in your work with Big Blue, do you have any touch points into that at all?
Yeah, I feel like I stumbled into quite the show tonight, huh? The yeah. IBM guys, I haven't said much at all.
I know, I got a bunch of IBMers here.
Yeah. A few weeks ago, let's see, there's a grand opening, or reopening of an IBM Innovation Center in Cambridge, Mass. That I'll be going to in February. So I'm Googling away while Christian's talking to see if I can talk about it. And yes, 13 hours ago, I can now talk about it. So,
good. Wow.
Yeah, it's cool. So yeah, knowing some of the behind the scenes stuff that's going on, and knowing some of the people running that place. I worked for a decade up at IBM in Waltham. So you might hear more from me about that. I don't usually talk about this stuff on the podcast, but the two worlds are merging, right? This is our practical everyday life stuff we're talking about here, and I think Christian did quite a job just now of explaining that and bringing that down to what affects people's quality of life.
Yeah, he's pretty good at that.
Devil's advocate would be, what would a doctor like my dad, a retired physician, think, right? That's a whole different perspective that we're not getting here.
I can only imagine what they would say.
Things are changing, and it should be interesting.
Yeah, that's some cool stuff. Some very interesting, some very interesting technology coming. Lots of promises with big data. I think we got a lot of years to work out a lot of problems with big data going forward, but certainly some very interesting stuff. The kind of the cool thing, as we think about breaking out Christian's Corner into its own podcast, that's the kind of stuff that I want to run with on Christian and just let him go on this stuff, because there's some good stuff out there. And maybe we need to have This Week in Watson or something like that, where
look, with all the HP talk, and actually I had some HP items on the agenda tonight, we got to even it out, but we've heard years of HP talk on these, right? Now we need the Dell guy on here too, right, Jim?
Right. Yeah. Well, I talked about the Dell venue.
There you go.
Front. So speaking of that, so let's talk hardware. Paul, on your side, you were on BYOB 134, which I got a chance to listen to just a couple days ago. And you kind of worked through some hardware issues at your place. So I encourage folks to get the whole story. Go back to BYOB 134 and do that. But you got some updates on that as well. Try and summarize and then push through with the updates.
Sure, I can do a summary of that. The gist of what's going on here is for the last 3 months I've been struggling with some issues with Cox Internet Service, but the payoff has been grand, let's say. I was the first guy in my town to get ISDN back in the 90s. This is kind of a big deal to me to be one of the very first in my town getting 150 megabit down and 50 up. The actual numbers I'm getting are 180 down and 30 up. So, woohoo! It's awesome. Yeah. Now, it was a huge struggle. Here's the catch. When you go past 100 megabits, boo me, right? You're past Ethernet wire speeds of a few short years ago, right? But when you blow past that, you need a new cable modem and you need a new router. So there's another $400 for you, or 300, sorry. So that stuff's been detailed on my blog, and BYOB 134, I lay all that out. Here's the interesting thing, Jim, that came up just this morning. I was rebuilding my VMware ESXi lab, forgot to download an appliance, which is a 2 gig file. And I'm thinking, I'm going to have to pause this video and come back. No. First, I click on the VMware download site and just click download. And it says, 18 to 20 megabits. That's pretty normal for MSDN or any old website or files that are provided to you. If they're not in a content delivery network like Akamai or something like that with a downloader utility, you're just going to get 10 or 20. You won't notice your house is 180 megabits down. Well, then things got special when I clicked on the little downloader. I could see the little Akamai thing pop up. Wow, the file flew down in a minute and a half while I was recording the video, and it really dawned on me that that's a game changer. Why the heck do I need to keep that OVA file on my local solid-state drive when I could pull it down in 90 seconds? So that's my little update.
That's pretty spectacular. I think one of the practical things that I took away from listening to that segment on 134 was that not all cable modems are created equal, and you might have bought your cable modem from your company, from your internet service provider, or you might have bought one 5 or 6 years ago, and it might be a DOCSIS 2, and DOCSIS 2 has got some limitations in there that your internet provider may have upgraded their service that you're not taking full advantage of. And even though DOCSIS 2 has some theoretical limits that might be above what you're currently getting from your ISP, it will still limit it because it's DOCSIS 2. And so you might want to take a look at your modem. And right now, upgrading to a DOCSIS 3 modem, not terribly expensive, I think. What would you pay for your new cable modem?
$83 for the Motorola SB 6141, and the advantage there is it lets you do logging. If you go with Cisco or another brand, you won't be able to see logs. So it'll work on Time Warner, Comcast, or Cox, so I can use it throughout my family. So you know which cable modem I'll be buying the rest of my relatives.
Is that
right? I standardize, and then I do a bunch of them.
Is that the silver one?
It's actually a white color, SB6141.
That's the one I bought, too. And you can get them just about anywhere. It's a pretty good modem. I've had really good luck with it. It's kind of an industry standard, right?
Yeah, just a quick footnote to that. Like you said, listen to BYOB 134, we get more into it, but there's actually 8-channel cable modems for DOCSIS 3, and there's 4-channel ones you might have bought only 18 months ago. And that's the point. When you go past 100 megabits, that's part of why I needed a new modem, even though my old one was only 2.5 years old. But 2.5 years ago, I bought that DOCSIS 3 moving from DOCSIS 2, doubled my speed without paying any additional on my bill. Just like you, Jim, that's the key take-home message here. Spend $80, double your speed without even calling your cable provider other than just telling them the new MAC address to activate it.
Right.
Which you can often do online without talking to a human anyway.
Right. It'll automatically, I think Cox has an automatic setup that you can just talk to it and it goes through and bam, you're in and they'll ping it. And yeah, my speeds got significantly better when I upgraded from a 2.0 to a 3.0. And we're not talking, I mean, it's less than $100 and you can get it at Amazon, you know, really inexpensive. And it's okay to buy it from Amazon. You don't have to buy it from the cable provider to get. Now, that's not true in every case, so probably somewhere along the line, maybe some cable provider requires it. But in most cases, you can upgrade that on your own. And don't forget, you know, head out to theaverageguy.tv/Amazon if you're going to pick up something from Amazon. I mentioned it early in the show. We got that tech scholarship going on, and that helps fund it. So I appreciate you doing that. So, yeah, some good lessons in that, Paul. As you were going through that, I had upgraded to the 6121, I don't know, 9 months ago and got all that goodness out of it. And, you know, like I get 60 down and 15 up here, which is pretty good. And it's good enough for me. I don't need much more. And that modem helped me get there. So it's a good upgrade. Good, easy upgrade if you haven't done that yet. Check your cable modem out. And then, like you said, if you have an older router, too, if you're coming through and you have an older router and you're going over that 100, it's going to get throttled. If you have a 10/100 router, it's going to get throttled at that spot. You might have to go to a gigabit. I think everybody's at gigabit, though. If you're a tech guy and you're listening to this show, you've probably got gigabit routers throughout your...
The surprise, though, was comparing ASUS and Netgear offerings, all of their latest 802.11ac routers for $200 roughly. The Cisco that I settled on, the EA6900, outperformed them both for wired connection. Forget wireless, just doing wired internet connection sharing of my new really high-speed pipe. So, yeah, I learned a lot getting the new pipe in here. It was a lot of fun and a lot of pain because we had some intermittent outages in the area. Yeah. But Cox has finally addressed those.
It was a painful story to listen to.
Well, yeah, meaning my day job and dropping phone calls, VoIP calls, you know, really annoying. Had my VPN tunnel die to work. Not good for 2 months, but we finally got through all that. Yeah. Well worth it.
Well, but you have to have it. It's your job, right? You have to have it. You're not like us where we're just whining, oh, I can only get 60 down and, you know, I don't use it for work. But you do, so very cool. Christian, update us on internet speeds there, because you touted that pretty highly when you got to the University of Maryland. Has it been all that throughout the semester? Is it as good as advertised?
Well, I'm in the crappy dorm for internet, so I don't really get that amazing pipeline to this particular room. I get a consistent 8 down, 8 up, which is nothing to write home about from this desk, but... next year, when it's the the OIT high-powered pipeline of bandwidth into Prince Frederick, which is a new cybersecurity dorm, that'll probably be a 700 or 800 megabytes per second downline, and I'm not sure what the upload is. If you get a cush spot in the McKeldin Library, which is the largest library on campus, you can normally get about 300 down if no one else is hitting it too hard, but
that's just dumb.
The
dumb speeds.
The Prince Frederick Hall next year with the ACES lab, that'll be, you know, as fast as you get, especially because UMD is its own ISP, so this will be right at the root node of the ISP itself. So
if you want to see the new building that Christian's moving into next year, just Google University of Maryland ACES, A-C-E-S. It'll take you right to the plans. I'm sure that's halfway done, right, at this point?
All the exterior is pretty much done. They put all the glass in. Actually, I think they just posted the Prince Frederick Hall thing on the Department of Residence Life website, too. So, it's really nice.
It's pretty cool. You're going to be set up. We're trying to either figure out a way to get you here or to get me there, and it's cool. And, you know, maybe once a month I get somebody to say, hey, do you recruit at the University of Maryland?
And I'm like, should.
yeah, it's not a great target for us, but I mean, it is and it's not, and we've talked about that. So, hey, I'm really interested, Christian, you put in this here, that Google is going to let users download portable files with all their Gmail messages?
Yeah, so this is interesting because Google Takeout, I use Google Takeout, which lets you archive and download all of your Google Voice stuff. So like all my text messages and such and voicemails, I can archive and download. But now they're letting this happen for Gmail. And so I'm guessing this is probably just going to wrap right into their Google Takeout project eventually. So I think this is a good move for Google because it shows that they're willing to let users have some control of their data and feel like they have a right to own and archive that material. So I think that's a smart step for Google going forward with a Gmail, which is arguably, if not definitively, the most popular average guy email service at this point. So,
Yeah, we do a lot of, I use Hangouts a lot, and when I ask people now, hey, just give me your Gmail address, there's no one ever says, oh, I don't have one.
Right.
It's I've done that with Skype, and they're like, oh, I don't use Skype, type thing. I get that more often than I get the other ones.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right, a lot of Gmail. So some good stuff coming.
Kind
of coming with that as well. Anything else on that?
No, except save for the fact that, again, this idea of data portability, I think, is important for large companies like Google to be touting.
Yeah, no, for sure. Speaking of touting, Paul, I'm real interested. You got the opportunity to meet Callie Lewis, which she was in Omaha last year about this time, and I know you talked about that a lot on Google+. Tell us a little bit about that experience. She's as fantastic as advertised. We know that. She's just great to hang out with. But did you get a chance to meet her? What was the event like?
Yeah, no, it was a very special event there. So a few days before, I saw it on Google+, I think only 2.5 days before. So normally they'll have hundreds of people show up, right? This one, they kind of spring it on the world last minute. So I thought to myself, about a 2-hour drive to Cambridge, Mass on a weekday, I think I might be able to do it. And you park your car, you walk over there, and you see this burger joint with glass windows, and there is John P. and Callie Lewis standing right there, and a few people crowded around them already, even though I got there right on time. And it's just a really, really cool night. They couldn't have been nicer to both of them. I mean, my goodness, just as friendly as they are on screen and in person. And the stories they told were just were hilarious. And it was fun to hear stuff that they really couldn't talk about the air, right? That on the air. That's the cool part. The part that makes any kind of meetup or user group you go to special, because there's some stuff that just happens when you're face to face with people that doesn't happen anywhere else. So it was absolutely a wonderful experience. Highly recommended if you ever get to meet those folks.
Yeah, they're all as advertised. They're both super nice.
Yeah, article I wrote in my blog too. I recorded John P. and Callie doing their thing, right, showing off a product right there in a burger store. The manager of the burger store comes over. He's wondering about Google Glass that one dude's wearing. The whole restaurant thing going on. Hilarious. Yeah.
Did they get permission in this place, or did they just say we're going to meet there? And like the rest, did the restaurant know they were coming?
Not so much. But the manager warmed up to us quickly.
Yeah.
Any corporate logo or something that shows on TV, they got to worry a little, right? Right. They can get in trouble.
Right.
We got past that quickly, and it turns out there was sort of a downstairs bar area out of the way anyway, and then there was just no issue down there. And there was 20, 30 people hanging out at a peak there. A lot of fun. And got to meet the IT person of the college I went to, and just a lot of people in the Boston area. Just you meet, context, just like when you go to user group. These are a bunch of IT pros that geek out on weekends and evenings like I do, right? And it's just a whole lot of fun. And John P. can be quite a hoot in the stories he told.
Yeah.
Including a story that he has blogged about publicly, so I can share it. Chuck Norris is his neighbor.
Really?
That was hilarious.
In Texas?
So you can imagine the stories he started telling about that. It was just so much fun.
That's cool. Good. Well, good opportunities if you're in those areas, and Paul's halfway between New York and Boston. Did I get that right?
You've got it. I'm less than 2 hours from both. It's an awesome spot to be in.
Halfway between New York and Boston, you can get to that kind of stuff. I'd love to be near Boston. There's a ton of stuff that goes on in Boston.
Yeah, no, Callie and what they're doing and their their presence in person and on camera, they're just very authentic and have a good way of reaching out to the average guy and girl, I would say, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of a big deal on TiVo or whatever that friends and family might actually watch a link you send from those folks.
Yeah.
That's a big deal.
Yeah.
They're not going to watch Christian and me, frankly.
they might. They might. You never know.
I don't know.
Probably not. But they... just saying. They probably won't. But I got Callie to record some bumper stuff. Hi, this is Callie Lewis, and you're listening to the...
Oh, cool.
and I lost it. It didn't record.
Oh.
I recorded that night. I recorded about 7 or 8 other sound bites. They all worked. The one that I recorded, in fact, I did 2 with her, and neither one of them worked.
So that sounded like a ding, but it's really a compliment in a way, Jim. You know, we're talking to a smaller niche audience. It's much more enthusiastic, right?
Yeah.
So they're reaching out to a broader audience. But they do some cool stuff, and so it's pretty techie.
They do. No, it's all good, so very cool. Christian, you had put a link in the show notes about the Chinese government pleading with Microsoft to extend what?
To extend Windows XP support yet again, because believe it or not, 33% of all Windows customers are still on Windows XP, and when those patches stop coming through, the exploits will grow rampant.
Now, 33% globally or 33% in China?
Globally. So 33% of Microsoft total Windows customer community is still on Windows XP. You got about 33% on Windows XP, 31% on Windows 7, about 7% on Windows Vista, and, you know, not too much better for Windows 8, 8.1, which is hovering in around 8 or 9%. So, I mean, the fact that 8 isn't doing much better than Windows Vista is interesting, but more surprisingly, the fact that we still have a third of the community using Windows XP is just absolutely...
Do they have any idea, is that like enterprise stuff? Is that embedded stuff? Is that stuff in a kiosk somewhere? Is that, you know...
It didn't specify, but I imagine it's a combination of embedded systems and older hardware that's lying around in, you know, older homes and such. So... It's hard to say, though, because, I mean, there's still plenty of corporations that are all Windows XP, so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a little painful to move forward on that and get folks off it. There's no reason not to move to Windows 7 for most people.
Yeah,
we've had so much time on this. I guess the security concern, and you'd also had a link in there that talked about recently 2 million passwords. Is that the same Adobe vulnerability that was released as well?
Yeah, Adobe's part of it, but there's actually, if you go to this website, Have I Been Pwned, pwned.com, you can actually type in your email address and it'll tell you. It's looking at the Adobe accounts, Stratfor accounts, Gawker accounts, Yahoo accounts, and Sony accounts. So put all your emails in there and see if any come back. But I believe that's in a response to that, so...
Yeah, and there's another site like that as well that when it seems like whenever Rennie's on or when we have Nathaniel on, we always go back to the site and what you same idea, you can put your email address in and it will check. Anybody remember what that was, Paul? Do you have
No, I'm trying to. You're right. Andrew did mention it. I'm not remembering off the top of my head what the URL was.
One of the guys in the chat will come up with it here in just a second. It'll take him about 30 seconds to hear us, but. But, so Christian, did you put your email address in there to see if you've been pwned?
Yeah, all my main accounts were fine. Believe it or not, one of my archaic Yahoo accounts was apparently compromised. But, again, thanks to my password system, it's not a big deal for me.
Yeah, let's not go down that route. I get crazy every time we talk about passwords. So let's not do that. Yeah, lots of vulnerabilities going on these days. Paul, we did talk. We won't have Christian go over it again, but password management, I imagine for a guy like you, you gotta have a ton of passwords as well, right?
Yeah, I mean corporations still tend to frown upon these things, right? But LastPass is quite popular, and still people like Steve Gibson swearing by it. So it's a tricky thing, right? With all the passwords you manage. But for personal stuff, yeah, I also use LastPass. And some of my passwords, you know, get a little crazy, especially having to do with the blog, right, with all the time you spend on dealing with that and backing up and FTP and SFTP access and locking it down. Those are the passwords that get a little crazy. And Gmail's a part of that and any kind of web hosting. So, yeah, just running any kind of blog, you're talking 5-10 passwords right there.
Yeah,
never mind all the personal stuff you do. It's a mess.
It is a mess. Tim Black says that his wife is still running payroll software on Windows 98. Come on, Tim. They can't be serious there.
There's still bank teller machines on OS 2. Come on.
Yeah. Well, you might
somewhere.
Be right. Those things just don't give up the ghost, do they? Yeah. And you're not going to move those guys to Windows XP, right? I mean, they're going to have to make a big jump at this point. And 7's been around years now already. I mean, it's kind of weird to think we've had that system out for quite a while. So that's just the way to go. Christian, how does social media make people happy? Always makes the people I talk to, it makes them sad.
Yeah, well, interestingly enough, there was a recent study that found that the company LexisNexis found that employees who use Yammer are far more satisfied with where their work and were 20 points higher in being willing to recommend working at the company to friends and family than people who didn't use Yammer. I was curious about this topic in general just because Yammer is pretty big in the stuff that I do, and I know a lot of companies at this point have hopped over to stuff like Yammer and SharePoint, but I was interested to see if that is a growing trend, if it's kind of leveled off, where it was at. So still been looking around for some nice numbers about how many users Yammer has right now, if it's growing, decreasing. Also interested in watching Facebook numbers and Twitter in general, just to see where the trends are and to see if, you know, how many years we can expect these applications to stay around.
Yeah. Well, we used Yammer for a while, and then we didn't, and now I'm back for the podcasting I do at work called the Coach. We that coaching area, these strengths coaches. Let me log in here and they. Oh, let's see. They have gone to using Yammer because it's the nice thing about it is it doesn't, you know, Yammer's got this thing where you can set up a domain and kind of own it. But then you can invite people in and create your own social network that's not necessarily based on a domain, mm-hmm. which is kind of cool. So you can have your own secure social network. You know, Yammer is really, 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 really close to Facebook in a lot of ways. And it's if you have never used that, head out to yammer.com, Y-A-M-M-E-R, yammer.com. Anybody can create an account. And so I think that, honestly, is the strength of it. I'm not sure, and it's different for companies like Oracle and IBM and Microsoft and such where they have 100,000 employees, right? You have, I think, enough employees to create critical mass because I think that's what's important for social. You got to have people using it and create some traffic associated with it. You get smaller companies of 100 or 500 or maybe even 1,000. I'm not sure you get enough critical mass to keep people coming back to this unless you build business process. You know, give people a reason to keep coming back to it.
Bingo. Yeah. If your tip or blog post or wiki article, whatever it is on your company intranet, actually shaves hours or minutes off people's schedule and gets them to dinner and time with their families, that's attractive, right?
Right.
That's when an employee's motivated to participate.
Yeah.
If it's just marketing something and it just doesn't interest them, it's not going to engage and keep them there. I mean, I found that true in my whole career, wherever I worked.
Right.
People want stuff to work faster, smarter, quicker, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so we at Gallup, we have a Yammer Gallup, you know, Gallup.com Yammer site, and it's okay. We sometimes use it and we sometimes don't. The problem is when people leave the company, you got to get, you know, you got to find a way to get them off the the thing. You know, Yammer was sold to Microsoft, so they own it, and it's supposed to become a part of the SharePoint platform. And we've been talking with our Microsoft reps about how to get it integrated in. I don't know if we need another social network inside our organization. So it's a question worth asking. But like I said, we recently started using it. You know, I'm on 3 different networks on Yammer. So I use Gallup. And then we recently came up with this Gallup Strengths Coaching Network that you have to be invited into. And it's working really well for that. You could duplicate that on Facebook. You could make that work. You can create a closed group on Facebook that does that as well. But Facebook comes with a whole bunch of nasty advertising as well, right? And Yammer does not have as much advertising now. So that's the advantage I see, Christian, to Yammer. I know, are you using it on a daily basis with some of the stuff that you're doing at work?
Yeah, starting to more so. Definitely not like a constant thing, but I actually use it for a lot of like documentation and collaboration now. So.
Yeah. No, good stuff from that perspective. And it, like I said, it works just like Facebook. So
yeah.
if you're used to that kind of Facebook look and feel, it's not a bad way to go. And, you know, again, like Paul, like we just said, if it's not being used, if nobody's going there, it's not going to be effective. You know, but if you can drive people to it and have them make it, but there is some, you know, we allow and encourage the use of social media at Gallup and what we do. And for it's okay for people to post pictures about what we're doing and, you know, work and outside of work and those kinds of things. We tend to be a happy organization, so maybe there's something to that. You know, I'm sure it's not just social media that does that, right? From that standpoint, Paul, how much how much social are you on at this point? Where do you draw the line?
Well, what's Facebook?
From a usage, yeah.
You're going to laugh, but I've never been on Facebook. I don't care.
Really?
Yeah, so there you go. You asked me, and I'm telling you.
Yeah, no.
I know that means I lose out a little bit in your group or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
I got into Google+, dove in, and that's what I've been managing. I've got enough already on my plate with the Twitter accounts and Google+ and all.
So does it bother you that you're missing out on the largest audience on the planet?
Not really. The stuff I hear from friends and family, it doesn't really intrigue me that much, to be honest.
I'll be honest. It's my way of keeping track of the family. I've kind of used it now as a family tracker. And
I'm lucky enough to live, quite near to the folks I care about most. And don't get me wrong. I saw that. Being in Cambridge, Cali Lewis, right outside the doors, there's the Harvard Yard. And you're looking at the social network, the set of the movie. And I get it. And I've been to Facebook for some stuff and customer support and whatever. But having my own name out there and managing family relationships, no, I never get into it. So, yeah, you asked, I'm telling you.
That's good.
That's unique and rare. I'm less than 1% or something.
With 1.15, that's the last number I have. 1.15.
Part of when it was getting big was before I went kind of public, right, Jim? When I first met you, I was barely talking about anything. I was still doing work, various IBM jobs that I couldn't talk about publicly and so forth. That all changed dramatically 3 years ago.
Right.
But Facebook was kind of before that, where we were quite private, those of us who traveled around and did various work that we just couldn't talk about. So, yeah. So that's me. That's different than most, I realize.
So Google Plus, your kind of number one social network at the, or Twitter.
Absolutely. And Twitter as well, yeah.
But you'd probably you spend more time on Google Plus than Twitter?
Definitely. For more media rich stuff and longer posts look at the meetup with Cali Lewis. That worked extremely well. You just posted your pictures to it. The people that showed up used their smartphones, took pictures, uploaded them right to the Google event.
Yeah.
That Cali Lewis had created. And boom, you saw the whole thing that went down and all the pictures of the people there.
Yeah.
Very simple and easy. So, yeah, this is professional and website work we're talking about, the way I'm using Twitter and Google+.
Right, right.
It may not quite be how the rest of the world does this stuff, but I know that.
No, a lot do. You know, Google Plus is not, it's still a nerd, it's a geek and tech location that's still heavily dominated by technology. So useful from that standpoint. A lot of folks still haven't found it, even though everybody has a Gmail account. They haven't made their way onto Google Plus, and they've heard that nobody's on Google Plus. That's the number one thing I hear when I say, "Hey, let's do a Google Plus hangout." And they're like, "Nobody's on Google Plus." That's the number one thing I hear, and I'm like, there's a lot of people on Google Plus. It's just not you, at this point. Christian, where are you finding most of your social interaction at this point online?
I'd say a good amount of it is nowhere because I really just kind of syndicate things down into what I read. I'll occasionally pull through, Facebook feeds and read stuff there. But all my video calls are still on Skype for the most part. And I would say Google Hangout with the integration between Hangout and Talk has probably been the biggest increase for me because now it's like fully integrated with my Galaxy Note, which is a big deal for me. So I've started using that a lot more. But other than that, it's not really... I'm not really too heavy into all of it. Twitter has been one of my side projects that I get active on for like a week or two and then die off. And so really the problem with that is I need some kind of unified software platform that allows me to post to all my accounts at once, which I used to have with the Seismic desktop app, but they've since gone off and been acquired by something else, and I can't get that same version anymore. So I really would like to find something like that back in my application portfolio to make that stuff easier.
Yeah, I think unifications of platform is a oxymoron. I don't think we're ever going to get to the point where you're going to have to go around the horn. You got applications like If This Then That, where you can, if you post something on Facebook, it goes to Twitter, it goes to Google Plus, it goes to right. But each of those ecosystems has a different taxonomy in the way it wants to optimize the posting. And as geeks, we can't just write something anymore. You've got to optimize it to be found, right? You got to hashtag it. You got to link people to it. You got to put the right URLs in it. You've got to, you know, there's all these rules that you have to do. Twitter is just ridiculous about that stuff. And you only have 140 characters, so you have to maximize the real estate that you have there to get it done. And as I've learned, you know, more about Twitter over the last couple of years, we do all these gyrations to get known, right? That's kind of why. I mean, it's Twitter, right, Paul? You use Twitter as an advertising mechanism for the most part, right? Not a communications platform, right?
Yeah, I only do 2 or 3 a week. A significant blog post, I'll let people know, or, right, you know, headed to a user group meeting today and kind of shot that out too as a nod off to the people that ran the event. And, of course, they enjoy it and retweet it, right? It's good for everybody.
Do you have a quality conversation on Google+? Or let me rephrase that. Do you ever have quality conversations on Google+? I mean, conversations, not advertising, but conversations where people talk back to you.
Yeah, the question is for me?
Yeah, for you.
Absolutely. I'd say 1 in 3, you'll end up with 2, 3, 4, 5 replies, and that's just a lot of fun, right? It's kind of an instant mini blog. You know, you type up some story, you put one little sentence or two, a URL to go with, and maybe a video, and that can be a lot of fun. And, of course, it's indexed and able for other people to find these public postings you make on Google very quickly.
Yeah.
Which, so if you don't feel like a WordPress full blog post with the graphics and all, you just want to get something that's sort of related to your blog or personal life, yeah, it's an awesome way to do that.
Yeah, and it's still very tech-centric. That audience is still, like I mentioned, is still very tech, and I think that's a good place for it.
Yeah,
Mike Howard is saying in chat, you know, Facebook works great for a show. He has a photography show that he does, jpegtoraw.com, and it makes sense. Most of his audience is on Facebook, you know, if you're going to go out there. We have a very vibrant group, Facebook group on, you know, at theaverageguy.tv/Facebook. Very vibrant group out there, a lot of good conversation, but most of the tech guys don't. I shouldn't say most, but I hear from people who, like you, Paul, who say, I'm not on Facebook at all, where in Mike's group, they're all on Facebook. I mean, that wouldn't even be an option for them. They're like, of course we're on Facebook. That's where the conversation is, you know, but your tech conversation is on Google+. And I agree with that. It's a great place to have those kinds of conversations. So, all right, real quick, let's bring this thing in. We're a little bit after the hour, and I want to talk a little bit about hardware. And the reason I want to talk about hardware is because I have a brand new Surface 2 that I picked up. We talked about that last week on the show. I guess it was 2 weeks ago on the show when I got back from, because last week was Thanksgiving, and we took the week off. So thanks for letting me have a week off.
So we're going twice as long tonight, right?
No.
There's so much.
No. But maybe you want to, but I got things. No, I'm just kidding. Paul, one of the things I'd really like to see is a USB, you know, so I've got the Surface. It's got a USB port on the side. I'd love one that had a USB port that would just stick out of the, you know, so it would be like this, and then it would be like this, and then the USB would stick out here, and then there would be ports on this side for, you know, so you could just jam it into the Surface, and it would come right up against the side of the Surface, and it maybe would give you 4 additional USB ports, you know, kind of wrap around that side. So I've been looking for something like that. It looks like you've been looking for some USB stuff too.
Okay. Yeah, let's talk about that. So is that, you got my camera. All right.
Yeah.
Here, let's make it simple. So Anker, A-N-K-E-R. If you Google them, or if you look for their brand on my tinkertry.com website, you'll see it still on the front page. What is this company? Well, in my quest for decent USB products, this not being one of them, a lot of them just seem to have loose, wiggly ports.
I saw that.
Or weird problems with the power supply, just not cutting it even though you have a big power brick. I don't know. I've not had good luck with USB 3.0 or USB 2.0 external devices. I have a 7-port Anker next to me here running the headphone that I'm talking on wirelessly and all kinds of stuff plugged in. About 4 of those 7 ports are in use. And then I'm holding a more portable model that you might find more suitable for a travel kit with a fairly short cable. Very highly rated in Amazon. So it's not often you'd see something like a USB hub that people are actually happy to pay a $20-$30 premium for, right? These are not $12 eBay ones I'm holding, so they do cost a little more. But in my experience, I've had no issues with them whatsoever. Windows 8.1 makes it really easy, right? Windows 8.1 just picks up USB devices, USB 3.0 devices, without an issue. No more drivers we worry about anymore. So finally, I don't use external USB 2 hubs anymore at all. I've gone USB 3 for everything. Why? Because sometimes I'm using tools like Rufus to make a USB key for a Windows 8.1 install on a flash drive, right? I want that to take 2 minutes, not 18 minutes. So Anker's the brand I found, and I think they're one way to go if you're trying to get what you wanted. Now, you wanted a shorter cable or maybe a right angle cable.
Yeah, like a right angle cable on that, on that particular one. Yeah.
So my dad's Yoga 13 from a year ago. Same kind of deal. I put a right angle cable on it so his power comes off one side, a right angle cable with USB to a Lenovo dock that has video out ports, a gigabit port. His printer and stuff can go USB there so that when he sits down with a Yoga, all he has is two cables, power and USB 3, and that's it. And it sleekly hugs the body and doesn't stick out in a weird angle that get in the way of his mouse or whatever, right? So you're right. There are right angle connectors out there that really help clean up your desk or make it right. And I would encourage people to shop for them. On a Surface, you might be thinking of a USB 3.0 to DisplayLink device. So DisplayLink is the brand. If you go to their site, they list their products, Toshiba, Lenovo, lots of companies make docks. But they're now making smaller dongle-looking things where DVI comes out of them, or HDMI. That's a nifty way to go, right? If your little 8-inch tablet has nothing but USB 3, and certainly doesn't have HDMI or DVI or Thunderbolt or anything, what are you going to do? Well, USB 3.0 I've been using for video for my triple monitor set up at home for over a year now. It can handle it. It's mature now on Windows 8.1 for sure. So those are my thoughts. Did that help you a little bit, Jim?
Yeah, a little bit. I like the fact that you gave a great recommendation on a piece of equipment to use, because I can never find great hubs. You know, USB
hubs. Yeah, I've been looking for them for years.
They just seem to be crap.
Yep.
And, I've got a Belkin one that I use. It kind of clips onto the end of my desk and makes a nice, kind of holds on there, and you can put the things in it. But it's never – the USB hub market has never been elegant at all. It's just been crap,
Yep.
And so as I look at these, it's nice to get a recommendation anchor, right? A-N-K-E-R?
Correct.
Yeah.
Yep. And, as we're talking, right, if there's value, you're sitting there listening to this, these are cheap devices. It's not like going to gym site gets a lot of money. But a couple of things you got to remember is you have to remember to do it. So going to averageguy.tv/Amazon and then going shopping is one way. And Jim, you might remember about a month ago, I put out a short little 2-minute video of another way. If people use Chrome and you like a blog, I recorded a tribute video to Jim here where I show the averageguy.tv affiliate link, and I enter it in a Chrome plugin in less than 2 minutes, and then I'm done. Whenever I browse and buy something from Amazon, those affiliate dollars, Jim is seeing pretty much everything I'm buying. He doesn't know I'm the one buying it, but he can see stuff.
Yeah,
it's anonymous. He does not have any idea. And it could be stuff that has nothing to do with his blog. It's just automatic. So I'll just point that out. And my blog is the same way. We have Amazon affiliate links that finally got legalized in Connecticut, by the way, only recently.
Oh, good. Wow.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Yep. And that was interesting. Our governor made some sort of deal saying, okay, you can't tax our citizens on out-of-state stuff. We're going to start collecting tax. You can't go back for back taxes. And we'll let you build a warehouse. And guess what? They're building a warehouse. And guess what? Maybe drones will be flying to my front step in 4 or 5 years. It's been quite a week for Amazon, right? They're doing some freaky stuff.
Yeah.
But for the blogger world, it is a big deal. They do have very easy tools to help you make affiliate links, and this is what's needed to run blogs like mine. It's not free at all to run my blog. It costs some real bucks.
It does.
And it really helps to have something to keep it going. And Amazon and Price Grabber and Skimlinks and those kind of companies really do help an independent blogger like me.
Yeah.
Just keep it growing.
It's always nice. I'll say this, Paul. You're always very kind to me whenever we do these kinds of things. And we turned our affiliate link into the Average Guy Scholarship Fund, which we buy equipment. We bought 5 or 6 things now since we changed that, actually. And I've been very clear about how much money we make doing this. But since we changed the scholarship fund, that amount month over month has doubled each month that it's gone up. So I appreciate you guys buying
that's great.
Yeah, we turned that money right back around. We were able to buy a mixer board that we sent out to Brad, and he reviewed it. And Gordon's going to get this Nest thermostat, and Nathaniel, or not the thermostat, but the smoke detector. Nathaniel did a little hard drive, so we're turning those funds around, and people are getting, and they get to keep that stuff. And actually, I've had a couple people contact me, and they're on a waiting list at this point. So that's kind of what we do with it. But let me say this: if you're out on Paul's site, if it's good information, make sure. And any blogger site, right, we pay for all this stuff. I happen to just pay Christian for my bandwidth and my hosting services here at The Average Guy. Christian's got his own VPN going and a nice little business on the side running the website. And so if you like what the averageguy.tv does and you're interested, Christian, are you taking new clients at all on that?
I mean, I don't promote it unless people ask, but if people ask, I do allocate space. Speaking of which, all of my repayments were up last week, which means that yours is on its way.
Just send me an invoice?
Not yet.
Okay, you need to send me an invoice.
Yeah.
So, and that's all good, right? I mean, Christian and I have been friends a long time, and he's running the host force. But like Paul said, we all pay for that. And I think one of the things, a lot, especially with podcasters, they don't realize when they get into this is it can get a little expensive. So let me just say this. If you're on somebody's site and the information's good and you're going to buy something from it, make sure you hit their affiliate link, whether it's at Tinker Try or whether it's at The Average Guy or whether it's homeservershow.com or whether it's at Surface Geeks or any of the other sites that are in our community, those guys, that helps pay for a little bit of bandwidth or buy them some gadgets or whatever they decide to do with it. It's always a good idea to do that.
And you're paying the same amount. And the point of that Chrome plugin is there's zero impact on your time. You don't have to think about it ever again. It's just automatic. And when you own a blog, you're not supposed to be using your own Amazon affiliate link. So I'm not supposed to buy through my own site anyway.
Right.
So it's a nice little tribute. I got to pick someone. I picked Jim this month. And then I just type it in a Google Chrome plugin. Boom, everything I buy goes to him without having to visit his site first and remember to do that. So, yeah, it doesn't cost me anything, right, other than literally 2 minutes to record that video to send up.
And we make 4 to 7% off of all those things that you purchased. It's a great way for Amazon to, you know, we're peddling their wares all over the place. Yep. I had a Newegg affiliate one time, and they kicked me out of the program, and so I don't buy anything from Newegg anymore. Amazon got my business because they made it a lot easier to get it done, and yeah, it's cheaper over at Newegg, and sometimes I do.
What do you guys think of the drones, the Amazon drones?
Yeah, that's a good question.
I sent you that video.
I think delivering pizza, they would be fantastic.
Okay, that was your you're imagining pizza. You need a really well-insulated box so it doesn't get cooled off by the propeller blades.
Yeah.
Ice-cold pizza through the sky.
Well, I was listening to, I think, This Week in Google or something, and, you know, the drones they showed certainly aren't safe enough to be flying all around.
They didn't even have propeller covers, right?
I know, untethered. And I imagine Jeff would give us more secure, you know, ways of doing that. And what would be the FCC and the FAA, and, you know, what are they going to say about all these drones flying around, you know, crisscrossing the metros to drop this stuff off? So, I don't know, Paul. Yeah, it's cool. It's really, really cool.
Not sure if it's creepy.
Really, really practical.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm thinking about computer parts and all the time companies like HP and IBM spend and money getting parts in a hurry. I've waited for couriers that are moving something around at 4 a.m. and I'm at some data center waiting for a part that gets driven from New Jersey to Connecticut by a human. I'm not saying that should be a drone, but those 30-mile drops or 20-mile drops for something really expensive and really urgent where someone's happy to drop some good coin to get it in a hurry? Maybe. I don't know. And it's hard to think that far ahead.
I think it's cool. Christian, what do you think?
Yeah, I think I definitely think it's the wave of the future. I still am not quite sure, you know, what's going to prevent those devices from getting smashed up or somehow altered from their original state. So,
yeah, Jim, that was your comment on my Google Plus post about it.
Yeah.
Can I shoot it down?
Exactly. I mean, it would have to, from the place where it's taking off, it would have to go straight up and then, you know, get significantly high. Now, those drones can fly at, you know, 5,000 feet and not be heard at all. I mean, so they don't have to go very high to get up there, and because they're pretty quiet to begin with. So, and you can't see them. They're so small, you can't see them. But even that being said, how many people would sit around and pick those things off as a sport? I can't.
It'd be fun to watch the drone attack, you know, the Google balloon going up, right? Those two companies are duking it out. It is all a little creepy. More stuff in the sky, though. It's something to think about, yeah.
Well, and there is just some interesting, but I totally agree with you for them to be able to come via for real emergencies type
insulin,
stuff.
Insulin, I don't know, or not insulin, life-saving venom. Yeah. So, there's organ, some stuff you could think about, sure.
Yeah. Organ donor, you know, type stuff. And you
that's
think,
pretty creepy, organs in the sky.
Yeah, no, true, it's all true, right? But it's one of those kinds of things. It moves fast, and it goes from point to point, and it can get exactly to the place that you want to get it to. So and drop that thing off without having to deal with traffic. Although the more that happens, the more traffic you're going to have in the sky, and the more collisions. Now, except if you got Watson involved. So maybe Christian, this is where
Can you imagine, we're talking like 5 years out, right? Callie Lewis was tasked with talking 10 years out at a conference she was at with John P. That's what they were there in Boston for. Or maybe 20 years out, but can you imagine trying to do that? Not easy.
Yeah, no, no. Just look at science fiction, though, and, yeah. And it will give you, we talked about this last week, you know, Star Trek had these guys had these tablets, right? And they were always writing on them. I mean, think about the old Next Generation. This was 90s. This was late 80s, early 90s, right? Next Gen. And they were writing on these things. And I remember with their fingers, you know, and I remember thinking, how about that? What could they possibly be doing on that thing that's productive? You know, it was one of those moments that, and yet today, what do? We pull out our tablets and we get lots of stuff done, hopefully, or we play Candy Crush, one of the two, on there. But just the fact that you can play Candy Crush on your phone and do that kind of stuff means you can be fairly productive on it. So kind of interesting where we're going with this. So what is, I guess if we look at what's the sci-fi of today, right? What's a movie or two that has come out recently that's got some real wild technology in it that we don't have? I guess that's what you would look to, and then some of that is going to actually happen, right? Probably. So yeah, I don't know what that is. I haven't seen any good sci-fi recently.
Yeah, I don't have many comments on the sci-fi movies, but I would recommend, if you're interested in 15 to 20 years out, to look at stuff published by Brian David Johnson, who's the futurist for Intel, and he generally looks out 15 to 20 years on all the work he does for Intel, and he's given some fascinating talks on this topic and how it plays into what Intel has been doing, so you might want to take a look at that.
All right. What's his name again?
Brian David Johnson. I wish we were related.
See if you can track down some info for him and throw that in the show notes for me, would you?
Sure. Yeah, you can definitely follow him on Twitter at Intel Futurist.
I think I've read his stuff before.
Yeah, I talked to you about him a couple summers ago.
Maybe it came from you.
No. But he's part of the Tomorrow Project at Intel and also does some of his own stuff. So pretty cool.
Paul, anything else?
No, I was just saying the first Google hit is his Twitter page, and it's at Intel Futurist for those listening. So, you're right. Show notes help for that because you'll never remember that when you're driving or mowing or whatever. You got to go back and look.
Yeah.
Thanks for the great show notes you've been working on. It's getting better and better, right?
Thanks.
They take work to put together, I know.
A little bit. Yeah. It always helps when I have the guests load those up for me, so it's always kind of nice to have those. And then if you're wondering what Paul's talking about, maybe it's been a while since you've been out, you know, you get the podcast through your iPhone or Android device or Windows phone, and you listen to it, and then you never get to the show notes. Over the last couple, 3, 4, 5 weeks, I have been actually including the timestamps in the page for the Google video or for the YouTube video. And so if you want to go to right to a particular topic, you can click on the link, and it'll take you right to that spot in the video where it begins. And that takes an extra half hour or so, 45 minutes. Cue all those up, make sure those timestamps are correct, and then get the right show notes into the right place. But all the links are out on the show note. For this show, I think we're 146, so this would be theaverageguy.tv/HT for home tech, which won't be that too much longer. 146 will get you there as well. And then I should invite you, since if you've made it this far, you're the top 5% most engaged listeners that we have. Dave Jackson and I have been getting together on Saturday mornings, 10:30 Eastern, 9:30 Central, for what we're calling Ask the Podcast Coach. And so Dave's a podcaster for podcasters. And we talk a lot of podcast mechanics. Mike Howard has been joining us out there from time to time in the chat room on Saturday mornings. We're just started just by goofing around, trying out different live services, and it turned into a call-in show that we're doing for podcasters. So if you're interested in joining me, come out, live show, 9:30 Central, 10:30 Eastern, Saturday mornings. I think it'll morph into a call-in tech show is what it's going to morph into, but kind of fun. I'd invite you to come out and do that. And Dave Jackson's a really good guy, and I've enjoyed getting to know him as well. And I find it very, very fun to podcast with other podcasters as well. So it's a lot of fun. And then don't forget, if you're maybe listening to this for the first time and you're wondering, man, I want to listen to this again, you can find all the links to subscribe to this podcast for services like iTunes or Xbox, the Xbox Marketplace, over at theaverageguy.tv. Just go on the page over on the right-hand side. All the icons are over there that you can subscribe to all the various services. And if the service you have is not there, let me know, and I'll figure out a way to get it for you. And you can catch the show each Thursday night like we're doing right now, live, 8 p.m. Central, over at theaverageguy.tv. TV Live, and some of the guys that we interviewed a ways back are coming back. So I should tell you, you might want to, let me just pull up that schedule real quick of some folks that are coming up here on the show. David Washington was a Microsoft tech evangelist, actually worked on the keyboard for the Surface and the Surface 2, the Surface 2 V2 keyboards, which have gotten significantly better. He is coming back as well. Michael Crump, who we interviewed a ways back, is coming back. A new guest, Mike Benko, is how he pronounces his last name, Microsoft MVP, coming back on the program as well. We will feature them as guests. And then Chris Barnes, if you know Chris Barnes from the Entertainment 2.0 group over there and the End User podcast, I begged him to come on the podcast here at the end of January, and he's going to come out, him, and hopefully we get John Zadler out. So a lot of good shows coming up in December and January. You'll want to be a part of them. Come out here and join us live on Thursday nights. So we have a good time doing this, and then hang tight. We're going to make some changes here, and we'll see what we come up with. I'm going to kind of let it simmer before I make any decisions. We'll just kind of see how it goes, and things might change. We'll just have to see.
All right,
man. So thanks for coming out tonight. We'll stay around for the post show, and we'll see you back here next Thursday, 8 p.m. Central, 9 Eastern, here at theaverageguy.tv/live. Paul, thank you again for coming out tonight.
Sure, thank you. And a quick shout-out to a new person in the live stream, NLightEnd1. He seems to be talking about home automation, so it's cool to see new names out there.
Yeah, he's been out before, but it doesn't come as often.
So. I haven't been around lately, so.
Yeah, no, it's fine. We're good. Good night, everybody. Thanks for coming out.
Good night.
Thank you, Jim.